This is the Frogcast.
I don't know where to begin. We've got so much to talk about. We got a loss to Oklahoma that felt like we snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. We got the game. We got problems that we're going to dissect. We got fans that we're going to bash. We got coordinators we want to fire. And we want to lament how bad this Big 12 is. That and so many more uplifting topics on this week's version of the Frogcast. Trey and Daniel, that was a difficult loss to suffer yesterday. The Horned Frogs lose 52-46 against the Oklahoma Sooners there in Fort Worth. We got a lot to go over today, so we're just going to kick it off we're going to start at the end. Trey, what was it like when the clock hit 000 last night and the Frogs lost?
Man, you know, they always say, or people always say, or I feel this way, that the first loss of the season is kind of always the hardest to take because you're like, man, you know, you lost a game that could really set you back in the playoff hunt or your ultimate goals for the season. But I left that stadium yesterday more mad than I have left there in a while. And I don't know if it was because of how the last, you know, series went on offense, or if, like you said, the Frogs put themselves in a position to win the game. And I apologize for my allergies sitting outside yesterday, and today has got my nose all kinds of clogged up. But
my advice is drink heavy.
Yeah, no, I did that. I started drinking, be like, well, hell, I think I feel a lot better now. But I don't know, man. We're going to, like you said, dive into these topics heavier. But I just left that game so mad because, like you said, this is not a good Big 12 this season. That's not a good OU team. I'm not saying they're terrible, but that's not a typical OU team. That's not the one from last year that went to the playoffs. That's not ones that Bob Stoops has had in the past that won championships. This is an OU team that is very average, and the Frogs put themselves in a position to win, and they didn't. And it was extremely frustrating, and it's kind of like the same song, different verse.
Daniel, I know you were there. How did it feel to see the Frogs lose in that last moment?
I wasn't quite as mad right off the bat. I was just more disappointed because it seemed so insurmountable to come back, and ultimately it was, but it was so unlikely to be able to get down by that much after a horrible second and third quarter. And then, you know, here they come, you know, just mowing down the field, you know, Taj Williams touchdown twice. It was great. I was thought, man, you know, they can pull this off. You know, whatever it is that they have that they started the game with, they started ending the game with it. And I thought, okay, good. That, whatever that is back. And here comes the team. But no. And it was just a big mess at the end. And it was just kind of like, I guess I have already conceded to the fact that this season's going to suck. So maybe that's why I wasn't so mad. But by the time I got home, which was pretty early since it was an odd 4 o'clock start, kind of rewatching some things, looking online, I got more mad, but initially it was just depressing.
That's the biggest gut punch of a home loss since 2012, when we got beaten by Tech in like the 13 overtime game. That's the most difficult home loss to stomach in several since our first year in the Big 12 in 2012. So oh gosh, that was so difficult. I mean, the futility of that last drive. There's a lot of things to complain about in that. We're gonna break down what we saw, but just to watch it all kind of evaporate on that last drive. When we came storming back, we held them to a field goal. Here comes the ball. There was no doubt in my mind we were going to be able to take the ball down the field and score, and then just it kind of evaporated. And it was depressing, like you said, Daniel. There was nothing. I don't want to talk about good losses. I don't want to talk about moral victories. We had that game. We had a chance to win it. We had a chance to win it after playing two terrible quarters of football, where Oklahoma went on a 42-3 run. And we still had a chance to win the game, and that just sucked. That's the only way I know how to put it. Well, let's take a step back here. I want to ask this simple question. We got a lot of things to break down. We got people to blame. We got things that we want to see changed. Give me your shortest, clearest, bluntest answer, Trey. What's wrong with this football program right now?
Well, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, like a good amount of Frog fans do that were calling me all kinds of wonderful names last night. You know, I don't know why I tend to start blame with the offense for some reason. I don't know why I do that, but I mean, obviously the biggest problem right now is this defense. And, you know, this is another game where a Gary Patterson defense has given up over 40 points. That's like, it seems to become, that's the regular these days. And I never thought that we would see that from a TCU defense. Like, honestly, like we have almost turned into Texas Tech Baylor like with this team, because it's, you put up a lot of points, but you play absolutely no defense. And, you know, it's so hard to put your finger on, because I think if we could bring on a recruiting guru right now and he could break it down and show us where maybe there was some misses in recruiting, or you could talk to somebody else that, you know, broke down film of the game, and they could sit there and probably tell you that, hey, you know, if you look at your defensive line or linebacker play, that they're just not making the plays that they need to be. But from a fan perspective, from a dude that's sitting in the stands and trying to take in as much as he can, I think it boils down to give a shit in leadership, man. Like, if you watch the defense on the field, is there anybody out there besides Ty Summers that really gives a shit? Like, seriously, like there's no leadership on honestly either side of the ball, but defense especially, there's nobody out there getting in players' faces. It doesn't seem that they're fired up. Even when they make like a decent play, it doesn't seem like, you know, they all get together and celebrate, or I don't know, man. It just doesn't. If I have you were like you asked me, if they put my finger on it, I'm going to say leadership, because I can't sit here and say it's Gary Patterson. He has a track record of putting together great defenses, and I don't think he just forgot how to coach defense. You can say, well, is the 4-2-5 now obsolete, or has other coaches finally caught up to him? I don't know. That might be a problem too. But for me, just as a dude watching, I think it comes down to leadership.
I don't disagree with you. I think about Tank Carter, Sam Carter, Derek Kindred, you know, Paul Dawson, Marcus Mallett. These are guys that they just fed off of each other's energy. Chris Hackett, the I hate this term, but the synergy of those people being able to play together and knowing who the leader was that would get in somebody's face, that would get somebody in the right spot, that knew how to react when a play was over to be able to fuel the next play. That does seem to be lacking. It's low energy, and it's the leadership seems to be lacking on both sides of the ball, but I see that so much on the defense. Now, I know that
defense is so much, I think, about emotion and those types of plays, whereas offense, I feel like you have to be more even keel. You know, you got to sit there, get the snap count, you know, do your pre-reads, get everybody on the same page. Whereas defense, it's more like pin your ears back, go get the guy with the ball and make a play. And it just seems like there's not that emotion.
Daniel, what do you see that is missing on this team right now?
Well, just right before Trey started, you know, to mention it, that's the first thing I thought of was leadership. And it's either it's a lack of leadership on the field between the players and probably somewhere along in the coaching. I doubt it's Gary Patterson, because he'll tear you a new one. But I think it's some of the other coaching. And then it's not there. I guess the lack of that leads to a lack of everything else, and it just kind of spirals downward. And, you know, I like something that is kind of off the wall, but or sort of pertains. But like Schloss said about the baseball team, you know, their motto or whatever it was get to, not have to. And it feels like these guys aren't appreciating what they get to do. And it kind of sucks.
Yeah, it does. I think that's a pretty good assessment. And of the situation right now, that you get to do this. This is a gift. This is an opportunity. And I don't want to be that old guy that wants to tell a bunch of 19-year-olds that could, you know, curb stomp me, that you got to play with more heart and you got to play harder. But there's things that are clearly lacking in terms of an emotional investment. You know, Patterson is cited, you know, after that Arkansas game, he said, I didn't see a lot of tears in that locker room. They hadn't lost at home in 2 years. That's not something that we're accustomed to. And that maybe that has continued to leak over and not shape the program in the way that he wanted it to. So we will see what happens going forward. But I think we can all be in agreement here that leadership is an issue with this team, emotional leadership. I agree with what you say, Trey. Defense is more about, you know, pinning your ears back and going and getting them. It's more than it is offense in this system. And that seems to be a big hole in the team right now. So we will see what they do going forward. If they lay another egg against Kansas, man, this is going to be a long-winded season. This is going to be a tough season. Yeah. All right. Well, there's a couple other things that we need to look at that, you know, we kind of hashed through the defense. We can talk a little bit more about that. But I want to start with what I think is my biggest critique in on the other side of the ball. I want to talk about play calling. I want to know how you can go from being up 21-7 to letting them go on a 42-3 run with the same weapons, with the same scheme, with the same, you know, strategy of philosophy of as an offense, and not put any points up essentially for two quarters. That was ridiculously embarrassing. And I took note of this in the SMU game. It was at the halftime, you know, little interview that Patterson has to do on his way to the locker room. And he publicly said that play calling was something he was not happy with. And I have never heard him cite a coordinator in a way like that. So, you know, I remember when everybody hated Mike Schultz. I had never heard Patterson comment on a coach like that. I want to know what it's like behind closed doors this week with Meacham, with Cumbie, and with Patterson, because Patterson is not happy with the play calling. I don't feel like we were able to run the ball. I know we got some injuries on the offensive line. I feel like some of our best weapons have kind of gone into the witness protection program for a couple weeks running here. I do not get the way that we have decided to throw the ball and who to throw the ball to and who not to throw the ball to, but I find that frustrating. But, you know, if you're just, you know, looking through the box score, we had 11 different people that caught the ball in terms of dispersing the passes. But, you know, Ty Slonina needs more than two receptions. You know, those are things that need to have. John DeArce needs more than one reception after having that amazing breakout game. Now, I know Taj Williams had 5 receptions for 210 yards, and you got to take what the defense has given you. But there are weapons that I feel are underutilized and under target, especially during that basically a half where we got the doors blown off of us. I'm really critical of the play calling, you know, for the season so far. I'd be curious to hear what you guys think about the way that the offense has developed in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, if you look at this game, what was it, 3rd and 1, and they ran the double reverse? Yeah. That was terrible.
That was brutal. That was brutal.
Terrible play call.
That's kids ball.
You go in, and like you said, Slonina, 2 catches. DR's coming off a great game where you thought maybe he was going to step up as the go-to guy for this offense, and he gets 1 catch. And what has happened to Deontay Gray? He had 2 catches and 1 rush. I thought he especially was going to step up big this season, and I thought he was going to step up maybe even bigger with Turpin out, and he seemed to be a non-factor. So I'm with you. I would love to hear what's going on behind closed doors, because the play calling does not seem as good as it has been in previous years. And I tweeted this last night, and I don't know if I'm jumping the gun, but I'm starting to believe that did Boykin and Dotson and them make these offensive coordinators? Because a lot of people thought that bringing them in, they were the ones who, yeah, don't get me wrong, they revitalized this offense because it was bad. But, you know, you look at Boykin and Dotson as 2 NFL caliber players. Were they the ones that actually made these offensive coordinators look a little bit better than they are? And I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself, but like you said, this is, it's over the past couple of games, the play calling, you can look back and take a look at, you know, we talked, was it last week or the week before, where they're, you know, what was it, first or second down inside the five, and they throw the
pass. Throw the fade to the corner
of
the
end zone.
Yeah, they
throw the fade, and it ended up working or whatever, but it's like, run the ball, pound the ball, do something. I don't know. You're right. The play calling has been very, very skeptical, and I don't know if it's like I said, there's a hard thing here to decipher of whether how much is it the players and how much is it the coaches.
Yeah, the issue that I see, though, I mean, like, even as I lambast two amazing offensive coordinators here for some play calling and some personnel deployment, this team put up 43 points in two quarters. That is awesome. If we put up, you know, if we just would have put up 15 or scored two touchdowns in the other half of the game, the middle half of the game, we would have won this game. 46 points should win you a game when you have the scheme and the personnel and the coaching that we have on defense. And I know it's easy to say, well, the offense should do better, the defense should do better, but 46 points is a solid production. But but with this defense, we're going to have to outscore everybody. I cringed at your assessment that we are now Texas Tech and Baylor, but that's exactly what this is. We lost the shootout 52-46 when we kicked one field goal in back-to-back quarters combined. So I go back and forth in terms of who to place the blame, but just don't run a double reverse on third and one. I think we can all be in agreement on that.
Yeah, that's just stupid. I mean, that's kind of Bush League. It's like, you know, what happened? Doug Beauchamp called that? I mean, what's happening here? Ugh.
I know. And we also, you know, we had some moments that just didn't happen. You know, Isaiah Graham, they caught him, you know, he was deep, wide open. That pass went through his hands. We had, I think it was D'Arce that ran that had the double pass that didn't quite get enough air underneath that. And those are both touchdowns. Those are both opportunities for us to score. And I know that, you know, you don't want to, you know, knock a kid for not catching a ball, et cetera, et cetera. But those are opportunities that with this defense, we're going to have to make the most of, because that, you know, the defense is like a sieve, and it looks like we're going to have to score a whole bunch of points to be able to continue to be competitive. So we'll talk about whether this was a good OU team or not in a minute here when we kind of dig into the rest of the Big 12. But we're going to go ahead and switch gears, and we're going to grab the third rail here. Are you ready, Trey? I want to talk about Kenny Hill. Are you ready?
I'm ready. My favorite.
Are you ready? Okay.
I am.
All right. I'm going to read you these numbers, and you tell me what you think.
Tell me.
20 for 38. With 318 yards for two touchdowns, one interception, and one fumble. Boykin, TCU, Oklahoma, 2014. Kenny Hill, last night, 26 of 44, 449 yards, five TDs, one interception, no fumble. What's your frustration with Hill? Because his numbers are lapping Trevon Boykin.
Let me start with this. I don't hate Kenny Hill, okay? I don't have anything against the guy. I think he's a great kid. I just think that you can throw out those numbers, and I'll come back with you and say he's thrown an interception in four or five games this season. And if you want to go back further, he's thrown at least his last 10 games. That interception he threw last night against Oklahoma, I could see it from the stands. I sit in 236 row X. I'm not close to the field. I saw that interception coming from the stands. He stared that guy down. He threw a crappy pass, and it got intercepted. And to me, you can throw out those stats. They sound great when you just separate themselves from the game. But to me, his stats are hollow. When it comes down to it, you can go back, you can look at Boykin, you can look at Dalton, you can even look at Paul Hall. When the game came down to it, those guys won ball games. You know, you can look at obviously what Dalton did. You can look at Paul Hall. He had a shaky career, but you can look at Boise State. You can go back. Obviously, we all know what Boykin did. To me, Kenny Hill's great. He puts up lots of numbers, and maybe it's unfair. Maybe I put him on too high of a pedestal. Maybe I was thinking, I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking, but like I said, I don't hate him. I just don't think he's the answer. And he's going to be the quarterback this season and next season. And I think it's you're going to see the same thing. He puts up big numbers, but they're just when it comes down to winning big games, I just don't think he's going to get them over the hump. And I've got called all kinds of names last night because I'm with you. When you put up 40-plus points in a football game, you should win that football game every single time. But to me, I just don't think he has what it takes to get TCU to where they want to be, which is in the Final Four. And maybe that's unfair. It probably is unfair. Because honestly, if the defense is better, at least just an average defense, they're probably undefeated right now. But I just don't see when I watch the game and you break, you know, you watch the throws, you watch what he's done. To me, it's just, I don't know, man. I'm just not a Kenny Hill fan. Nothing personal, nothing against him. I just don't think he's the right fit.
So to bring it full circle, what he basically has is Sonny Cumbie numbers.
Yeah, that's
from when he played at Tech.
Yes, he's in a system that is designed to put up those numbers, and I'm just not a fan, man.
I understand. You're wrong, but I understand what you're saying.
I agree. 95% of people disagree with me completely. I just don't think he has what it takes to get it done.
Yeah. I think he's done a good job. I thought this was his best game of the year. You know, he did throw an interception. I get that. You know, Boykin threw multiple interceptions against Ole Miss, and we still beat him. You know, that was I felt good about his numbers. The thing that was frustrating that he didn't get a chance to do, and I'm going to put this on the offensive coordinator, and maybe we put this on Oklahoma's defense. I don't think we got to see enough of his legs. They had multiple starters out on defense. They had get freshmen out there playing linebacker, and I don't think we utilized Kenny Hill's legs as much as we should have. He maybe should have had 360 yards passing and 100 yards rushing, but I feel good about what he does. He knew what to do, how to get that ball deep. Obviously threw that bad interception to Gray, but we've got issues with Gray too. I don't think he's 100%. So right. I know that was a bad pass, but that was also a target that, you know, we're not on here to badmouth a kid, but there's something that's not clicking for Deontay Gray, and I unfortunately believe that. And so that's why I feel much more confident with Hill. You made this comment, Trey, on Twitter, that just because you're not a fan of Hill doesn't mean that Foster Sawyer is the answer. So is your critique in terms of what Hill needs to do, or do you think we need to make a quarterback change?
No, I don't think they need to make a quarterback change. I think that Hill, of the quarterbacks on the roster currently, is probably going to give you your best chance to win. Foster Sawyer, I don't know a whole lot about. Obviously, we saw him a little bit last year, saw him a little bit in some cleanup duty.
Hello?
I don't necessarily think the right – I don't think the right – can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. My bad. I gave out there. I apologize. Keep rolling.
No, you're good. I just think that I don't know if it's the best decision to start switching quarterbacks in and out or something like that, or, you know, if Kenny Hill throws an interception, you know, bring Sawyer in for a series or two. I don't think that's necessarily the answer. I think Kenny Hill's the best quarterback on the roster. I just don't think he's going to get us to where we need to be. Honestly, that's just my thought, my opinion. You can crucify me if you want. I just, even if the defense was great, I don't know, man. This is one of those things where, like, I don't know what the problem is on defense. I don't know why I feel this way about Kenny Hill. Maybe it's just because I compare him to Trayvon Boykin, and Trayvon Boykin's freaking lifetime type player, a quarterback. Maybe I just have – I'm holding him to higher standards. I don't know, man. I'm just not a fan, and I know all quarterbacks throw interceptions, but it just seems like this dude is an interception machine. He is good for at least one interception a game, and you can count on that by your watch.
I think Kenny, I think Trevon Boykin was a great quarterback, and he clearly is a great quarterback and is, you know, playing in the NFL as a rookie. I also think Paul Dawson made Kenny Hill a good quarterback. I think Marcus Mallett and Chucky Hunter and Davian Pearson made him a really good quarterback. And between 14 and then those guys that were there in 15, his maturity obviously helped stretch the team in 2015 in order to, you know, fill in some holes on the defense. But I you know, we're trying to decide which side of the ball gets the most blame, but Kenny Hill does not have Chucky Hunter, Davion Pearson, Paul Dawson, Sam Carter, Derek Kindred. I could name three more guys that our defense doesn't have one of to touch those guys that we would name. And so when I think that the criticism of Kenny Hill that you have could be fair, it's accurate in terms of what you say. He's going to throw an interception a game. I'm with you on that. But I also think he doesn't have the counterbalance. And it all kind of ties back to what we've said, which is passion and leadership and a fight on the defensive side of the ball that I think is lacking. That I think if that was there, that offsets some of the criticism that you say that I think would set Kenny Hill up to be able to thrive and to be able to succeed. Daniel, in the middle of our little back and forth here, you got any more thoughts on Kenny Hill? Are you going to correct Trey and I? Or are you going to split the difference?
I go back and forth. You know, like when I saw that interception, I too could see it from where I was sitting. You know, you could just as soon as you let go of that ball, it's like, ah, crap. And so I was mad, and I was like, you know, why would you make such a terrible decision? And then, you know, he did, you know, plenty of other things that were great. Two long bombs to Taj Williams late in the game that were just right on target. So many other things. I would like to see him use his legs more, but that's not always on him. So yeah, I kind of have mixed feelings, but in general, I like him, and I see him getting better, and that's kind of what I keep waiting to see, like more of a real breakout. Like at the beginning of the game yesterday, on fire, one pass, boom, and I thought that was going to be the start of a great game. Well, whatever, didn't quite work out, but overall, yeah, I'm all right.
All right, a couple more things I want to break down inside of this game, and then we're gonna kind of take a macro view of TCU football and college football. I want to take you to a moment where I thought, holy crap, this we are gonna blow the doors off these people. Kyle Hicks takes that pass and takes it to the house, and we are up 21-7. As I'm watching Kyle Hicks weave his way into the end zone, it reminded me of the touchdown that Tyce Lenina scored against Texas Tech that I think put us over 70, where somebody on Twitter described the Tech defense as turn and jog slowly. So I saw a deflated, half-hearted attempt on defense by Oklahoma when Hicks scored and we went up 21-7. And I thought, holy crap, we're going to blow the doors off of these people. And from then until basically the fourth quarter, it was a joke. And that moment, I don't know what happened. You know, I hate when people say they let up or they felt like we could handle it. Or I would hate to say I believe that is what I'm saying. I don't know exactly what happened in that moment in the second quarter, in the third quarter. But when it was 21-7, I thought, oh my gosh, we are gonna lay the wood to Oklahoma just as bad as Ohio State did. And it didn't happen. The other moment that I want to get your guys' take on is the end of the game. So we have that very last series that when they kick off and we get the ball, I had that feeling like I had against Kansas State. I had that feeling like I did in the last, you know, in the overtime of the Alamo Bowl. I thought there's no way that they're going to be able to stop us. And then we just kind of fizzled out. What was your experience? And what do you want to complain about from that last series of the officials, of Bob Stoops, of Gary Patterson, of the play call? What was your mindset as you watched that last series unfold, Trey?
Well, I had the same feelings. I thought, you know, you saw TCU rally back. They hold them to a field goal. So, you know, it's like it's a 6-point game. This game. And I thought that they were going to do it. And then first down, you get the false start by the offensive line, which is so damn deflating. It's like this is the most critical drive of the game. And now you're going to start in the hole. And then that freaking intentional grounding call, which, you know, watch from the stands, I'm going crazy at this point, and the play happens, and I don't think anything of it. Like, I don't think that it's going to be intentional grounding at all. And then the refs get together, talk about it, and it's just – it's painful, you know. And it might not have been that long, but at that moment of time and sitting in the stands, I'm feeling like these dudes are talking for 10 minutes. Like, this is taking forever. And then once they finally come out and say that, no, it's no intentional grounding, you know, we're like, okay, good. From the stands, I didn't know till after the fact that Bob Stoops is over there going crazy, throwing his headset and all that. I didn't know that was going on. And then they come back and change their mind, and it's just mind-blowing to me that, you know, we can sit here and debate if that was the right call or not. I don't think it was the right call at all, but it just seems like this type of stuff always happens with the Big 12 referees. Like, why does this league have the worst referees in the country? Like, you can put them up against any sport, NHL, NBA, you know, NFL, whatever, Big Ten, just line them up against all every other group of referees out there. And it just seems like the Big 12 refs are the biggest boneheads ever. If that wasn't okay, if you're not sure, don't make that announcement that it's not intentional grounding, then come back and change it after the fact. It looks terrible, even if it's the right call. But like I said, I don't think it's the right call. He's getting hit as he released the ball. Who knows where that ball ends up if he's not hit at the moment that he's throwing it. And just that whole last series is, I think, what made me leave that stadium so mad, because it was just terrible. Like, it was not good at all.
No, that was deflating and frustrating just to kind of watch us. It felt like we just took a knee. I mean, that's what it was. It felt like we were just kind of taking
really
a knee.
It really did.
Yeah. Yeah, let's take a knee to end this game and get this thing over with. No, I don't think it was intentional grounding because of the contact. If there was no contact and that was the pass, that was intentional grounding. Yes, it was. And I know the refs sort of have a bias to not call intentional grounding. You're basically supposed to look and try to find a receiver for it. But if he wasn't hit, that was intentional grounding. But he was hit. But like you said, Trey, you know, they basically are like, all right, we'll listen to you. Oh, we believe you. No, we'll listen to you. Oh, we'll believe you. Let's get together and talk. Let's make an announcement. I mean, it felt like it was, oh, gosh, it was awful, the process of that. And these are not the same refs that botched the Oklahoma State game where they gave them an extra play. These are more bad Big 12 refs. So it was frustrating to watch that
it's
whole thing
to be
unfold.
The Big 12's best crew as well.
Yeah. That's the worst part of all this. That was the best crew that they have. They got that guy that's the referee with the white hat that looks like he's 60 and doing steroids. His arms are huge, if you saw that on TV. And he got pushed around by Stoops, and then he had to get an earful from Patterson. You know, it was bad to watch. It was painful to watch that.
He himself, Mike DeFee is his name, is actually generally pretty good. But I don't know, man. Something was going on that night, and the fact that he caved to Stoops just really pissed me off.
Yeah, you don't announce it and then say, well, the coach has kind of changed my mind. That's what it felt like. That's exactly what it felt like.
And intentional grounding never even crossed my mind, because when I saw the play happen, I couldn't imagine what they were talking about. And then they come out and they're like, there's no penalty for intentional grounding. I was like, well, yeah, because I didn't see that. And so I didn't even see it in the first place. I was confused why as they were talking. And then, what a joke. It's just, I mean, the fans rightfully were just giving them hell.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up the game. I want to put you guys on the spot here to give us a little encouragement. What did you see, or who did you see, that at least gave you some confidence going forward? You know, we're relieved from having to have the mythic idea anyway that we were still in a playoff hunt with our one loss to Arkansas in overtime. What did you see that made you feel good about the rest of this season?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I think I'm still high on Kyle Hicks. I think he's, with Turpin out, he's the most talented player on this team. So you mentioned his touchdown earlier. That was beautiful. He's extremely talented. Taj Williams, you know, he had a great game stepping up. You know, one area that I was really surprised with, they were putting him out every time they wanted to, which I thought was great. I didn't know we had the leg, that type of leg strength, but that was great. And I mean, I'm a big Ty Summers man.
Fan.
I really like the way that dude plays, and I think he's going to end up with a great career.
Yeah, I agree. I love Ty Summers. I love Ty Summers. Daniel, one or two things you saw that you feel good about going forward?
I guess, yeah, Ty Summers and Kyle Hicks really in this game are, you know, are the ones that stood out. It feels like, you know, anytime Oklahoma was doing some kind of play, whoever ended up making that stop, it was either Ty Summers or he was right there with him or something. He was just, he seemed like he's really kind of, there's only a few people out there and he's one of them. So I wish we could have a few more of him for some reason. And then, you know, Kyle Hicks, I wish we had more running ability as far as the line, the O-line, because it's pretty sad. But that would be great to see Hicks explode out of there more. And I wanted to say John D'Arce, but he really didn't do anything in that game. And that goes back to play calling and the complaining about that. But just if we can eliminate crap like those two quarters, like we you know, the SMU game, the first two quarters, the first half, played like crap, came back, turned it all around. Why come out on top in the first, you know, piss it all away, only to have to try and come back in the fourth? It's just a bizarre way of having things done. I don't know why it is, and I feel like if we could kind of clean that up and the penalties, which are ridiculous, we might have a satisfactory season, maybe.
One of my favorite players now is Jaylen Austin. He's, you know, sophomore, had the big touchdown pass in the Alamo Bowl last year. You know, he came right out of the gates on that first play and caught a touchdown pass. I felt really good about Jaylen Austin. I thought he had a really good game, 5 receptions, 46 yards. I think we're going to have a solid career. Jaylen Austin's going to be one of those guys that, you know, nobody builds a statue for, but he's going to contribute for 4 years. He's going to be a starter for 3 years, and he's going to put up good numbers and at some point probably be all Big 12 in one way or another. I really liked Jaylen Austin. I like his game. He seems like a really solid human being, too. So I liked what I saw in him. And I thought Tejada did okay yesterday. I know that we've also got questions about his health and how he's been handling everything. I really like Tejada. I thought he put up a pretty good game, and I know he's fighting back, and I know he's got to feel frustrated to be from where he was his freshman year with that defense to be where he's at now, and the frustrations of recovery as well as personnel. I felt really good about Anthony Tejada. So hope he continues to get better this season, and I hope that defense continues to gel together. All right, Trey, you had a rant you wanted to go on because why not? What do you think about TCU fans as this game was unfolding? You had some thoughts you wanted to share, none of which, of course, apply to anybody listening to this show. But what did you think about TCU fans yesterday?
Yeah, I might make a few of them angry with this, but I also at the same time think it's something that Chris Del Conte needs to address as well. Is, I guess, first thing first, and we've talked about it, the dude, he needs to sell beer inside the entire stadium and eliminate the in and out at halftime. I'm so tired coming back from halftime and going to the seats and seeing a large, I don't want to say majority, but a large amount of seats on the west side just unoccupied, man. Like, we came back third quarter. I know at the beginning the score is a little lopsided there, but you got freaking Oklahoma at home. This is probably the biggest home game of the season, and there were so many people missing. It started filling in a little bit, obviously, as stragglers come back in from halftime getting food or whatever, but it still never completely filled back out. Like, the fans were great, I thought, in the first half. Like, a majority of them were black. They were loud. And then
don't tell me what to wear.
Yeah, I've got black on right now because I thought this was a blackout podcast. But It's frustrating to me that so many TCU fans, I guess, either are obsessed with tailgating or two, just it's for them to be seen and to socialize, and they put that ahead of the game, and it just drives me crazy because we're battling so many things as is. The small alumni base, the club section that's you can call it a disaster. You can call it is what it is. I know it's a big money generator, but a lot of those people just hang out in the AC, all that, and then more power to you if that's what you want to do. But to me, I've grown up going to sporting events my whole life, and I've never gone to a game to be seen, to socialize, any of that. Like, I don't get me wrong, I love tailgating. I tailgated before almost every single TCU game, but I get in my seat for the national anthem, and I'm back in my seat for the third quarter. And it's not like we're playing, you know, I somewhat can get it if we're playing Iowa State, or back in the day, you know, we're playing Wyoming or whatever it might be, and they're up big at half and it's 90 degrees out and you're like, this is over. I just want to go home, watch the other games, chill out. I can kind of sympathize with you there, but you've got Oklahoma at home. The weather was absolutely beautiful yesterday. You couldn't have asked for better weather for that game. And it's just disappointing to me, man. It's just very disappointing that, like I said, you have all these things that you're battling as is, and then you just have fans that just want to go out and leave or go tailgate. And it's just like, man, to me, it's frustrating, and it looks very bad.
You know, the other thing we're fighting, and nobody wants to talk about this, is when the Big 12 falls apart, we gotta be in the best possible position to be able to look attractive to one of these other conferences. And, you know, we're essentially fighting for another spot with Tech, with Baylor, with Oklahoma State, with Kansas State. And when we got the biggest, like you said, this is the biggest home game of the year, and we got people sitting out in the parking lot rather than coming in and supporting the team, that just looks bad. And those are little edges that we're losing in what is an ongoing realignment battle. I don't care what Del Conte says. We are fighting for a position for whatever is going to happen when the Big 12 falls apart. And it looks awful when we don't have people in there in the stands to cheer on the freaking team that needs our support. That's kind of.
And it's not like these are tickets in the upper deck. I mean, these are the best seats in the house, and they're going empty. It just is so frustrating. This, I guarantee you, Amon G. Carter Stadium is one of the few stadiums in the country where the visiting side is always more full than the home side.
Oh, that's a bomb. I love it. I love it. Well, Danny, you've been coming to these games since you were a little kid back, you know, in the Southwest Conference and the WAC and all the, you know, the long winding road of realignment. Do you agree with Trey that we basically have a bunch of country club wussy fans, or are you comparing to this to when we'd get 18,000 people when we played Rice?
No, there are far too many of these, you know, social types. And I'm guilty of that. Back in the day when, you know, when we were younger, all the high school and middle school age kids would hang around the scoreboard on the north side. That's just what we did, but we were also kids. But that kind of spills over into just that whole, there's just a portion of TCU fans and all that. That's just what they do. It's all about being social. I guess they're, you know, socialites or whatever the hell. I don't even know what that is. But
I think the word you're looking for is fraternity.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. But even as they get older, they still do that. It's all about sitting at your car with this, you know, $10,000 worth of rigs so hooked up. Looks like, you know, Bruce Wayne decided to make a frog cave in a parking lot and to spend a ridiculous amount of money on food and beer and all that. Well, that's fine, but then pack it up and go to the game. And then I don't get it. And I hope that the selling of beer throughout and limiting in and out access would alleviate that. But I still feel like some people just aren't going to come at all.
Yeah, that's a concern. Well, Chris Del Conte, I know you've listened to this for 45 minutes. You're here at the end. I want you to hear our encouragement. Please sell beer at the game. Do anything we can to keep that stadium full. I know those are big donors. I know that those are people that give more than Trey and Daniel and I make combined. But anything we can do to keep that stadium full of people and have the kind of amenities that most college football games now offer, there's that needs to happen. I really believe that needs to happen. I'm with you. All right, two last things, and we're going to wrap this up quick. Trey, you wanted to comment on the length of this game. Tell us what you thought about. Are these games too short? Is that what your problem is?
No, don't get me wrong. Like I love college football. I love going to TCU games. I loved getting home and watching that Louisville-Clemson game last night. I watch a ton of college football, and I love the sport, and I love the games. It's just the length of these games is just becoming too much. I mean, 4 hours is really pushing it. And to me, I mean, I kind of know the reasons. Obviously, you got the stoppage of clock after first downs. There's, you know, you've got these offenses that throw a ton of passes, so you get a lot of incomplete passes, which stop the clock. So I guess I get why these games are long, but it's just, it gets to me, it's getting a little frustrating. And I guess it's night where whatever, there's 13 or however many touchdowns in the game, and it's a touchdown, extra point, commercial, come back, kickoff, commercial, and then come back. And if it's like a quick three and out, you might get another commercial right after the punt. And it's just commercial, commercial, commercial. And a lot of times, you know, when Fox or whoever broadcasts our game, if it's home game, I don't know. The stoppage in play is different, I guess, when you're in the stadium. And so all of that, it doesn't bother me as much as, I guess, when I'm having to watch an away game or whatever on TV and there's all these commercials. But it just seems like these college games just keep getting longer and longer and longer and longer. Whereas you got the NFL, who has basically been able to narrow down their games to three hours and 15 minutes. And, you know, unless it goes into overtime, that they're pretty much have got their TV schedule on lock. And it just, I know the games are different. And like I said, the rules are different. It just seems like these college games just continuously get longer and longer and longer. And I would like to see that addressed in the future because, you know, there's a lot of people out there, you know, obviously, you know, me and you, Jeff, we have kids, and there's a lot of other people out there that have kids and stuff. And it's just like, it's hard, one, to set aside necessarily 4 hours, but if you're going to a game, it's like, you know, I get there 2-3 hours before the game, then you have a 4 hour game, you invested 7 hours right there, then it takes, you know, an hour to get home, whatever, depending on where you live, longer if you know you're coming in from out of town. And just, it's a whole day's worth of events. And it just, I don't know. I would just like to see maybe them at least take a look at what could we maybe do to, you know, speed up these games or something like that. Cause it's like getting into baseball territory where it's like, damn, man, this game's going on like 4 hours now. Like, I'm trying to do something else, you know?
Yeah, I would encourage you, if you haven't listened, Joel Klatt has a podcast called Breaking the Huddle, where he talks about improvements that need to be made to college football. And one of them is talking about the length of game. And he suggests some hybrid of what you're describing, where the clock doesn't stop on a first down unless it's, I think it's under 4 minutes or some variation of that, when, you know, you want to preserve time or you want to be able to, you know, extend a drive.
And there's a part of me that kind of likes that rule, because honestly, it does help a lot of these dramatic comebacks that we see, because, you know, a team might not have timeouts, but, you know, they can pick up a first down. It stops the clock for a minute, helps them out. They can get to the line, all of that. So I like that idea of maybe not eliminating it completely, but looking at maybe something there.
There's got to be something, because that was a long game yesterday. That's all there is to it. That was a long game.
It's the commercials. It's ridiculous. And Fox is the worst. I've been scrolling through it today, you know, skipping all the commercials, and I probably watched the whole thing in 2 hours.
That's about almost two hours of commercial then. That's terrible.
Oh yeah.
Well, all of that is fueled by cord cutting. You know, most, you know, people are cutting the cord by the day. You know, ESPN is just hemorrhaging money right now. And live sports are the one thing people will tune into no matter what. You know, there's shows I'm watching. I'm watching that new show, Designated Survivor. And I've never watched it live. I just watch it on Hulu whenever I feel like it. My wife and I kind of watch it on a Saturday afternoon. Or we watched it before the game the other day. And so Designated Survivor is something I watch whenever I want to. But you just can't pull up the TCU game 3 days later and say, huh, I wonder what happened. No, they're paying their bills right now on cable with live sports. So it'll be curious. That's what's paying all these big contracts for the SEC and for the Big Ten, Big 12, PAC. So they got to do that.
And not to bring up a sport that most people don't care too much about in this country, but you have just the English Premier League, for example. Well, you know, they have 45-minute halves, and there's no commercial breaks in those games. You know, that's why you do see, you know, the sponsors on the jersey. They have sponsor, you know, banners all around the field. And I'm not saying TCU should go to that and have, you know, AT&T plastered on the front of their jersey or anything like that to avoid, you know, going to commercial break. But I think there can be some things that you could work out here that could shorten these games a little bit.
Well, we should do an off-season podcast about how to make college football better. I'm all for that. I think we could put together 4 or 5 topics.
Let's make college football great again, guys.
College football great again. Let's build a wall with Alabama and make Auburn pay for it. That's my hope, so... Yeah, well, I would love to talk about how to make college football great again. That'll be great. That actually leads us to the topic for the next show. We're going to do a debate, and we're gonna let Trey take Trump, and Daniel's going to take Hillary, and we're going to break it down, and I'm supporting Gary Johnson because it's 420 all the time. So that's what I'll be doing.
Perfect.
Doing that. Well, I'm not either. I guarantee you, I'm not either, man. Not at all. All right. Well, guys, I think we're going to wrap it up here, man. We've been going strong here for almost an hour, so I think we need to bring this podcast to a conclusion. All y'all that live in Fort Worth and work in Dallas, this podcast should have taken you the length of your commute, so you'll have to listen to the hard line on the way home. Well, we know this was a frustrating loss. We know this has been a difficult season, but this take no comfort in this, but this team still has potential. We're 2 plays away from being undefeated. Let's just do what we can to run the table in the rest of the Big 12. Let's do what we can to beat Kansas this week, get that bye week that I think we need, and then hopefully we can, you know, put together a strong string of games to end the season. I'd still love to beat Baylor, to beat Tech, to beat Oklahoma State, beat Texas, all those teams that I can't stand, West Virginia. I'd do anything we can to continue to make some noise in the Big 12. No reason at all that we can't do that. No reason at all that we can't do that. I hope you'll track us down on iTunes. We'd love for you to subscribe to us there. Leave us a rating if you can. We are the best TCU football podcast that originates from 3 different counties. We'd love for you to rate us. Also, you can track us down at thefrogcast.com. And we are a proud member of the Killer Frogs family. So as always, for Trey Fallon, for Daniel Southern, I am Jeff Mitchell. Thanks for listening to The Frogcast.